It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting deadly violence at Kabul Airport. That's where three U.S. defense contractors who are helping train Afghan Air Force personnel were gunned down. It happened Thursday in what military sources say was an insider attack at the airport. Elsewhere, a suicide bomber attacked a funeral in eastern Afghanistan. 16 people were killed and dozens of others wounded. The attack occurred in Lagman province during the funeral for a police commander and three others killed in a roadside bombing. No one claimed responsibility for either attack. Suspected Islamic militants set off a car bomb and fired rockets at police and military targets in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula Thursday, killing 25 people. Officials say the weapons were aimed at a military base and a hotel in the town of Al-Arish. The latest deadline passed with Jordan insisting on proof of life for a Jordanian Air Force pilot who was being held by the militants. An audio message purportedly from a Japanese journalist, also captured by Islamic State fighters, said the pilot would be killed immediately unless Jordan released by sunset Thursday Sajidi al-Rishawi, an Iraqi woman on death row in Jordan, for her role in a deadly bombing in Amman in 2005. Jordan says it would consider releasing al-Rishawi only after receiving evidence that the pilot is still alive. The World Health Organization says efforts to slow the worst-ever outbreak of Ebola are now shifting to a focus on ending the epidemic after the number of new cases fell to its lowest weekly level since the end of June. A total of 99 new cases were reported last week in the most affected countries of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. This is VOA News. The FBI added a U.S. citizen born in Somalia to its list of most wanted terrorists, saying he may have knowledge of U.S. government buildings, Washington airports, and the area subway system. The wanted man is Liban Haji Mohammed. Officials say he may be using several aliases. The FBI says Mohammed lived in a northern Virginia suburb of Washington and worked as a taxi driver. He apparently was a recruiter and radicalizer for the Somali-based terrorist group. The FBI believes Mohammed left the United States in July of 2012 and is now in East Africa working for al-Shabaab. The FBI is offering a $15,000 reward for information leading to Mohammed's arrest and conviction. The United Nations Children's Fund is appealing for a record-breaking $3.1 billion to assist 62 million children facing conflict, disease, and other humanitarian crises. Lisa Schlein reports.
The biggest chunk of the money, nearly $1 billion, targets the deepening emergencies in Syria and affected areas nearby. An additional $500 million will be used to scale up efforts to tackle the devastating Ebola epidemic in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. The appeal will provide assistance to 98 million people in 71 countries. Two-thirds of the beneficiaries are children. UNICEF pinpoints the Syrian conflict as the world's worst humanitarian crisis among the many tearing apart the lives of children and their families. Lisa Schlein, Geneva.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is blaming Iran for Wednesday's deadly flare-up along the Lebanese border. Mr. Netanyahu says Israel will continue to defend itself against all threats. The border between Israel and Lebanon was calm Thursday, a day after clashes between Israel and the Iranian-backed Hezbollah killed two Israeli soldiers and a UN peacekeeper. European Union justice and interior ministers are looking at ways to strengthen anti-terrorism measures. Their two-day meeting ends today in Riga, Latvia. Lisa Bryant has more.
Proposals by the EU Justice and Interior Ministers aim to bolster existing measures on surveillance, information sharing, and border control across the 28-member European Union. The proposals include establishing an EU-wide system to share airline passenger information that can help them track jihadists coming to and from the Middle East. Ministers also want to better control the borders of the Schengen passport-free area and to work with internet providers to remove terrorist and extremist content. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
New figures show the U.S. labor market getting stronger. The Labor Department says unemployment claims fell to a 15-year low last week. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Chadian troops reportedly capture a Nigerian village from Boko Haram as confusion plagues Nigeria's voter card distribution.
Folabi Balogun arrives just in time to help the election worker unload the boxes of voter cards from the car 4 hours after distribution was supposed to start. Getting his voter card has turned into a week-long scavenger hunt.
Plus, Bill and Locke in Lagos, Nigeria. A study finds next month's Nigeria presidential election is too close to call. Senegalese human rights groups call on their government to provide refuge for Gambians fleeing persecution. And former South Sudan vice president and rebel leader Riek Machar says there are still obstacles to peace.
There's so much difference. The structure of government, the power-sharing ratios, the constitution of the National Assembly. So there are differences.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe will speak on political gender equality in Africa, and Human Rights Watch says 2014 was a turbulent year in Africa. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Chadian troops aiding the fight against Boko Haram are reported to have retaken a village in northeastern Nigeria from the militants. Abubakar Mustafa, who lives across the border in Niger, told VOA's French to Africa service that Chadian forces took control of the village of Malam Fatore on Thursday after a series of nighttime airstrikes. In a telephone interview, Mustafa said he saw planes and heard bombs being dropped on the area Wednesday evening. He said he learned of the town's recapture from Niger troops, who he said are sealing off the border to prevent fleeing militants from crossing over. There has been no official confirmation of the report, but Nigeria's News 24 quotes military spokesman Chris Olukolade as saying Nigerian military jets conducted missions around Malam Fatore for the past 2 days. Nigeria has about 2 weeks until nationwide elections and at least 25 million voter cards left to distribute. That's about 40% of the electorate. Confusion about procedures and delays in getting millions of cards from the manufacturer mean voters are walking away from distribution sites empty-handed. The Electoral Commission said these challenges will not delay the polls. Viewers and Luke takes us along on one man's quest to pick up his voter card in Lagos.
Folabi Balogun arrives just in time to help the election worker unload the boxes of voter cards from the car. He's the only one here. 4 hours after distribution was supposed to start.
Looking for them all over the place.
Getting his voter card has turned into a week-long scavenger hunt, following leads to its location. This is the third place he has been, and it's his third time coming to this spot.
Just to do the right thing. I don't think anybody will want to go through all this stress. Most people might just decide not to bother.
Today's clue was a phone number posted outside the community center, the ward's designated voter card pickup spot. The election worker wasn't there. Instead, she decided to set up at a nearby junction. Out of the sun, she said. But the victory in finding her is short-lived. This is not Balogun's voting ward after all.
You can't find your street on any of them.
No.
That means you didn't register here.
She directs him to a school in the next ward. He thanks her. Not everyone does. Voter cards for people who registered in December haven't arrived yet.
They insult me and say that INEC doesn't know what they are doing. They are confused. They disenfranchise them. I too feel for them. I'm not even happy that when I search and search and search, I won't see your... I feel for them too.
People on this street call her the woman. As in, have you seen the woman?
No, the woman I spoke. Did you make an inquiry?
You made inquiry, but the man will make you inquiry.
She's there now.
Where? This side there.
No, at the junction. This junction, by your left.
One man tells Balogun he should spread the word. A debate begins.
Where will I spread again? Am I an INEC official?
Patriotic duty comes up at one point.
People come here to ask me, where is the woman? I said, I haven't seen them.
Someone asks if we know what Surulere means in Yoruba. That's the name of this 12-ward district, Surulere.
When we say Suru,
That's what it means. You have to be patient. Understand? But delay, it means there must be reward after the patient.
Patience has its rewards. Balogun heads to the school.
Adam, you can't find it. Is it beside the tantalizer?
It takes about 20 minutes and two more phone calls to find it.
There's a guy with a box here. If I do another few minutes, I'll give it up and go.
There's another hiccup. Balogun lost his temporary voter card from 2011. This election worker doesn't have a list of this ward's polling stations like the woman did. All he has are 41 bags of voter cards on the ground, one for each polling station. Each bag has a list of as many as 500 names. And look, VOA News, Lagos.
The presidential contest between Nigeria's incumbent president, Goodluck Jonathan, and main rival General Muhammadu Buhari from the opposition All Progressives Congress APC party is too close to call, according to the latest Afrobarometer opinion poll. The group said it interviewed 2,400 prospective Nigerian voters with equal representation across the country and with a margin of error of plus or minus 2%. Nanga Daniel, a senior member of the Afrobarometer team that conducted the study, tells reporter Peter Clarty that the survey was scientific and a true reflection of the prevailing situation on the ground.
Okay, so the key finding that we found was that people rate INEC as ready to conduct the election. But this was contrasted by quite a number of people who said that they don't trust INEC at all. But we are likely to expect high voter turnout, as much as 78% of Nigerians said that they will almost certainly come out to vote. And this was true across ages, across geopolitical zones. It seems everyone is just waiting for February 14th to go out and cast their vote.
What about the election itself? What did the findings prove about who is going to win or who has an advantage to win?
One of the very interesting findings. When we ask people who they were going to vote for, we find that apart from the leading political parties, the ruling People's Democratic Party and the main opposition, but in terms of the two leading political parties, we have a tie. So equal number of persons, 42%, say that they will vote for the ruling party, as much as 42% again said they will vote for the opposition party. And even when we ask, regardless of the voting intention, we ask Nigerians to predict the likely winner. And it turned out that both the leading political parties, they are also running neck and neck. 39% predict that the ruling party would win, and 38% predict that the opposition would win. And the difference between them is actually negligible. So we think that the election is too close to call.
How scientific is your polling?
Our poll is very scientific. I mean, as scientific as polls of this nature can be. The methodology is very good, well standardized, and comparable to what obtained elsewhere. We interviewed 2,400 Nigerians, very well distributed across Nigeria, although we had security challenges in three states.
You just spoke about the security challenges. Did the respondent talk about how this will affect their voting pattern? Was that reflected in your polling?
Yes, actually, when we ask where people intend to vote, it was surprising to find that the highest number of voters would actually be coming from the northeastern part of Nigeria.
Nengak Daniel is a senior member of Afrobarometer. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from Nigeria's commercial capital, Lagos. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 30th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. A coalition of Senegal-based human rights groups plan to call on their government today, Friday, to provide safety and security to people fleeing persecution from the government of President Yahya Jammeh in neighboring Gambia. After a failed coup attempt last month in the Gambia, human rights groups say family members of accused coup plotters are still being detained in secret. Fatou Jayan Senghor, director of West Africa's Article 19 rights group, tells Ricky Schreier their campaign will involve Senegalese bloggers and government authorities and aims to improve human rights in the Gambia.
We are gravely concerned that dozens of people, mainly family members who are of accused coup plotters, have been detained for almost like a month in Comunicado without any information about their whereabouts, why they're detained.
It's not just the people who were involved, but women and children, or elderly women. Someone's mother, I believe, is in detention.
Yes, like one of the person who was killed during the operation, like the mother, about 80-year-old woman, has been arrested. A child of one of the person who's believed to be part of the operation, who left the country, also has been arrested, and like part of his family, like more than three people from the same family. And you see like situation whereby like three or four people from the same family have been arrested. There is no information about why this is happening. And the most threatening and most challenging thing is that recently family members were attempting to try and get information about the detention. And they were threatened of imprisonment if they continue to ask questions.
What is the likelihood that some action is going to be taken, though? I mean, Jammeh's regime has kind of repeatedly rebuffed foreign efforts to address the human rights situation there. What kind of recourse are you guys looking for?
Well, obviously, we think that the regime can't just be left to deal with this very important and serious situation. And I think international effort must be put on this, and concerted effort for that matter, to ensure that there is proper investigation into the human rights abuses that have been committed in the Gambia for the past 20 years.
Senegal earlier this month deported an exiled Gambian opposition figure who had called for his countrymen to rise up and overthrow Jammeh.
That was an unfortunate decision. We supported that case and through the courts. For many reasons, I think the Senegalese government had acted on that specific case in a way that we denounce as human rights organization.
That was Fatou Jayan Senghor, director of West Africa's Article 19 Human Rights Group, speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. South Sudan's opposition leader, Riek Machar, with the government. As viewers Gabe Jaslow reports from Addis Ababa, Machar spoke following a meeting on Thursday with South Sudan President Salva Kiir.
Talks mediated by the East African Group of Nations, IGAD, ended without agreement Thursday, further postponing a deal to end more than a year of fighting in South Sudan. Speaking to VOA after a closed-door session with heads of state, South Sudan opposition leader Riek Machar said several key issues continue to stand in the way.
There's differences. There's so much difference.
What are the major holdups still?
Well, the structure of government, the power-sharing ratios, the reconstitution of the National Assembly. Okay. So there are differences.
While the rival sides have agreed in principle to establish a transitional government, they have yet to reach consensus on the distribution of power. Foreign Minister Barnaba Mariel Benjamin, on the side of the government, denied any vast disagreements and said there have been positive developments in recent talks.
There are no major obstacles. The fact that peace cannot be negotiated in hours, you know. So there are issues to be worked out and clarified.
The IGAD heads of state are to meet again Saturday to continue work on a peace deal. Conflict broke out in South Sudan in December 2013 when a power struggle within the ruling party divided factions of the armed forces and allied militias against each other. The violence has left tens of thousands of people dead and displaced more than 1 million. The warring sides have signed several ceasefire agreements, the first one over a year ago, but all have been almost immediately violated. Benny Gideon Mabor with the South Sudan Law Society says despite past failures of the peace process, with enough pressure, the current round could yield results.
There's this issue of sanction, which is clearly on board. There is the issue of the African Union Commission of Inquiry reports, which apparently will implicate heavy political and military figures on both sides. And therefore, these are clear threats if parties fail to reach an agreement.
The AU inquiry report being presented to the Peace and Security Council has allegedly documented abuses committed during the conflict in South Sudan, but the text has been kept confidential, despite calls from civil society and rights groups for the report to be made public. IGAD has threatened to impose sanctions against the parties to the violence, but has not taken action. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The 24th Summit of the African Union gets underway today, Friday, in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. The theme is women empowerment. But Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe, who is likely to be elected the next chairman of the body, says it is impossible for women to be at par with men politically because of their biological role to bear children. Mr. Mugabe says while it is ideal to have women in decision-making positions at all levels of society, it is not easy as most women tend to drop out of politics once they start having families.
When it comes down to the ground, it's not easy for them. They get married. They must have babies. They must look at home, at the children. That's the problem.
So what do you...
So what we get normally, those who argue women who are single or divorced, here and there you get one or two who are married, provided it's easy constituents or something.
In other words, it's up to us as women to choose. Huh? In other words, you're saying as women, we should choose whether we want to have families or to be in politics.
No. Oh. I'm saying it's not possible that women can be on a par with men. You see, we want children. We make the very women we want in parliament pregnant. Yes, and we remain it. But it's not possible. That aspect only. We leave it to the women. If they give us the numbers, that will bring about the balance fine. But the treatment generally of women, equal pay for equal work. And even as they get, pregnant, they must be paid if they are employed. They must be paid for that period and not for, companies or government to say, we will give you only 3 months. It must be 9 months right through.
Okay.
Things like that. We will have to send you to Europe because they are not doing anything about women as our missionaries. and get them to say, why is that you don't have enough women in your parliament? You started long ago, and you talk about gender to us. Don't talk about gender to us. We talk about gender to ourselves.
That was Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe speaking with reporter Sandra Nyaira of VOA Zimbabwe's service on the sidelines of the 2015 African Union Summit in Addis Ababa. 2014 was a turbulent year for human rights in Africa, says Human Rights Watch, which released their annual report on Thursday. The international watchdog group says sectarian violence and abusive responses of government forces fuel many conflicts in the last year. The report, released on the eve of the African Union summit, also notes that African leaders have been too slow or too unwilling to react. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg in South Africa.
The rights group released its annual report just as Africa's heads of state began to converge on Ethiopia's capital for the annual African Union summit. The report echoes the main topics of this year's summit: the West African Ebola epidemic, Nigeria's brutal Boko Haram militants, and the conflict and instability in several African states. But one thing is missing from that discussion, say Human Rights Watch researchers: strong political will to improve human rights across Africa. Dewa Mavinga is a Human Rights Watch senior researcher for Zimbabwe and Southern Africa. He spoke at the report's Africa launch in Johannesburg.
We feel strongly that the AU could do more and that it has, in many cases, been weak and slow in reacting.
The AU has consistently supported its own, voting in 2014 to give sitting African leaders and senior officials immunity from prosecution. And the continental body has awarded its presidency to several leaders who have been accused of heinous and widespread rights abuses, like Libya's Muammar Gaddafi, Equatorial Guinea's Teodoro Obiang, and, next in line, Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe. Ashling Reedy is a senior legal advisor for Human Rights Watch. She says the AU not only has the potential to radically improve human rights on the continent, it also has the muscle and the manpower.
They absolutely could make a difference. I mean, that resolution to which you refer is absolutely unacceptable. The idea that leaders in their self-interest are going to try to create some immunity, it's no longer acceptable in where we have the International Criminal Court, the first sitting permanent court, where we have the African courts here set up, that you can try to exempt people for the worst crimes. We're not talking about small crimes, we're talking about crimes against humanity and war crimes and torture and that. So if the AU was to put aside its short-term political interests and look at the interests of the people of Africa as a whole, it has the instruments at its disposal.
Reedy also notes some small advances in human rights, notably the AU's efforts to establish a court in Senegal to try Chad's former dictator, Hissène Habré. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. Guinea has advanced to the Nations Cup quarterfinals at the expense of Mali following the random draws conducted at the Hilton Hotel in Malabo on Thursday. Guinea and Mali tied in second place at the end of their Group D preliminaries. The tournament organizing committee then followed Article 74 of the Orange Africa Cup of Nations regulations to determine who advances and who goes home. At the draws of the lot, Mali Football Association President Boubacar Diarra drew the ball marked 3, while Guinea Sports Ministry Finance Director Amara Dabo drew the ball marked 2. Hence, Guinea progressed to the last 8. This method of settling a deadlock has previously been applied on 2 occasions. In 1972, the then Nations Cup hosts Republic of Congo advanced at the expense of Morocco, while in 1998, Algeria progressed as Ivory Coast went home. Staying in Malabo, acknowledging that this is not the best way to resolve this matter, the CAF Communications Director Junior Binyam told the media on Thursday that they were compelled to abide by the laid-down regulation. He says CAF will explore the possibility of an alternative system to separate teams that find themselves in such circumstances in future. On a more cheerful note, the quarterfinals gets underway with a Central Africa derby featuring the Republic of Congo playing the Democratic Republic of Congo in Bata tomorrow Saturday. This match will give way to the showdown between Tunisia and hosts Equatorial Guinea. On Sunday, the spotlight returns to the capital Malabo, where Ghana play Ivory Coast before Guinea challenge Algeria. Finally, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, and the United Against Malaria campaign have renewed their partnership, CAF revealed in Bata. They continue work on spreading messages aimed at life-saving malaria prevention and treatment. Mali's Seydou Keita, Ghana's Andre Ayew, Cameroon's Nicolas Nkulu, and Ivory Coast's Gervinho are prominent players romped in to lead the campaign. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Chadian troops aiding the fight against Boko Haram are reported to have retaken a village in northeastern Nigeria from the militants. Abubakar Mustafa, who lives across the border in Niger, told VOA's French to Africa service that Chadian forces took control of the village of Malamba Fatore on Thursday after a series of nighttime airstrikes. There's been no official confirmation of the report, but Nigeria's News 24 quotes military spokesman Chris Olukolade as saying Nigerian military jets conducted missions around Malam Fatore for the past 2 days. That's it for this Friday, January 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jim Hammond, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend. Hello, Africa. I'm James Butter here to remind you that February is Black History Month in the United States. And starting February 2nd, we'll begin our Black History Month series and daily quiz on Daybreak Africa. Listen every morning as we profile historical African-American and African individuals and events. You can win special VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. Please send your answers to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your answer. We will select a winner each morning from among the correct answers.